Welcome to the podcast of Focus 580, featuring interviews with newsmakers and experts on international affairs and daily life, hosted by David Inge at WILL Radio, Urbana, Illinois. Please support this service by becoming a member and visit us on the web at will.uiuc.edu.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. Our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to have here on the program once again Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And once a month she's here. We talk about lawn and garden care, things that grow in the home landscape, houseplants. That's also possible if you want to ask questions. Give us a call, 333-9455. The toll-free line, 800-222-9455. And I know that if you have some kind of problem still you're concerned about from last year, or if you are starting to think about what you will be doing this year out in your garden, Sandy can advise you. So you can give us a call. Thank you for being here again.
Yeah, you know, it kind of looks like spring. If you don't actually go out and feel the cold wind, it kind of looks like spring.
Just this morning, Ed was talking about the fact that yesterday, I was getting ready to leave the house, and yesterday morning at that time, it was 60. And this morning, right now, it's 34.
Go figure.
That's spring for you.
Yeah.
We have, in my yard, I know I have crocus. That was the first really springy. Mm-hmm. The snowdrops, they've sort of been going for a while. But this is the first thing that really poked its head up and said, hi. And I don't know if I would expect anything else at this time. But clearly there are tulips and daffodils and stuff like that that have their shoots, their green stuff up.
So it's going to happen. Spring will get here.
Well, that's what they said. Well, next week, in fact. Yeah. We'll see. We'll see about that. We have several callers here. We started to get people lined up. Real quick, before we do anything else, why don't we talk about that subject you mentioned here before we got going, this business about termites and mulch that apparently people are really worked up about.
Yeah, the last week or so, I've never had so many emails about people concerned about termites and mulch. And the email that was circulating around and scaring people to death was about actually wood coming up from Louisiana because of Katrina. And obviously, they have a lot of trees down. They have a lot of wood, you know, from buildings and stuff that they're having to get rid of. And the email was saying that all this wood was coming north in bagged mulch and that it contained Formosan termites. And Formosan termites are a subtropical species that we don't have here in Illinois. And the email went on to say that there was no control for Formosan termites and don't buy bagged mulch and went on and on and on. So it was one of those urban legend kinds of emails. So if you've gotten that email, forget about it. Just don't worry about it. Couple of things actually wrong with the email. One of them is the fact that Formosan termites are a subtropical species. They're not native to the United States, but they are known in the southern states, but not in every single county in the southern states. And I think Memphis, Tennessee is as far north as they've ever seen it. So it tends to be one that's going to stay to those warmer areas. So that's number one. So probably more than likely, even if it came up here, it wouldn't survive. And certainly wouldn't survive in one season in order to be a pest. The other thing is that Louisiana is under quarantine and has been for months, where they're actually quarantining the wood, because not every county or every parish down in Louisiana actually has Formosan termites, so they don't want to spread it around anyway. So they're trying to keep it in those counties that are already infested. So there's already a quarantine going on, so they're not letting wood go out of those counties that are already infested with Formosan termites. So that was the other problem with this particular email. So if you do buy bagged mulch, then I really would use it normally as we would, you know, 3 to 4 inches is just fine. Probably wouldn't put it smack dab next to the house for a number of reasons, but you certainly can still use it. My other thought would be, you know, why not use a mulch from like the landscape recycling center that we have here in Urbana? Use local stuff. Don't use the bag mulch if you're particularly concerned, but also just environmentally, it makes more sense to use that bulk type of mulch that we can get from local landscape recycling centers, and they have good stuff. They have good product and stuff. So that would be the other thing. So if you've heard that email, don't worry about it. You can sleep tonight.
Okay. Well, we have several callers here, and we'll get right into it. We're starting with someone in Danville. They're line number one. Hello. Is there a caller there? Line one in Danville?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes. Okay, I have some roses, which this is the first, this past fall was the first time that I let them go instead of putting them back in the fall, because I heard that it was okay to wait until spring sometime. When would be a good time to prune those back?
I would say now. Usually we say about the 1st of April, you know, it's been a little bit warmer. But about the time they start to show a little bit of green bud is a good time to go ahead and prune them. Then you know what died over the winter time, and you can kind of evaluate them before they get leaves in.
I wasn't sure if right now, it depends on how cold it's going to get between now and 2 or 3 weeks from now.
Yeah.
I didn't want to cut them back too soon.
Right. I mean, to be on the safe side, if you're particularly concerned, I'd probably wait, you know, to around the 1st of April. But usually, again, usually, I don't know these things, but usually we don't get, even though it may get cold, it doesn't get severe as in, you know, like below zero or even into the teens at this point. I'll say that and then turn around and next week it will. But normally we it may get cold. But so even just freezing temperatures normally wouldn't hurt them even if you'd cut them back.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Sure. All right, thanks for the call. Let's talk next with someone in Mahomet, line number one.
Yes,
hi.
Yes. I have a couple of sweet gum trees and with all the attendant balls.
Aren't they lovely?
Yes. And we saw an ad for something which turns out to be an injection, which will cut the number of sweet balls. Do you know anything about this? Mm-hmm. Is it possible?
Well, I know there's certainly a spray, and I would imagine they certainly could put it into probably a formulation that would keep down the number of gumballs. It actually aborts the flowers, which is the whole idea. And so it wouldn't surprise me. I, as I said, I'm not familiar with the injectable, but it wouldn't surprise me if there is such a product. I know there is a spray.
All right.
The problem always was with the sprays that you had to time it at the right time. You know, they had to be in flower or just getting ready to flower. And that's tough because the flowers are not very visible. You know,
apparently, that is the that's the same thing. We were told it would be within 2 weeks, a 2 week period when they are coming into flower.
So timing is a little hard, and then you have to do it every year.
Yes,
but certainly if it's, you know, if it's a high priority on your list, is, you know, certainly in high traffic areas, those gumballs could actually be dangerous. You know, when they're falling all over the place.
Yes. All right. So, well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm,
that's
sure.
What we need to know.
Good.
Right, thank
Bye.
You. And next is Urbana, line number two. Hello.
Yes, my lawn looks great in the spring. Then about June, I get little round patches. They call it summer patch.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything I can do to anticipate that and stop it from coming? It's just happened the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Is it always in one particular area, I assume? Or?
It's kind of where the sun is the strongest,
right?
Where I don't get much shade.
Right. So have you checked that area to make sure you don't have, you know, too much thatch? You know, thatch shouldn't be more than a half inch.
No, it's almost thatchless. I'm pretty. In fact, the trouble is my wife says I'm too proud of my lawn. It looks great in June in the summer.
Yeah, so I would certainly check that, if that's not an issue for you. Probably the other thing you might really think about doing, if you know about where it's going to happen, you might think about doing it through the month of April, actually doing some overseeding. Mm-hmm. And there are some, and I don't have those in front of me, but we could certainly get a list for you. There are some particular cultivars that don't seem to get summer patch quite as bad.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes just getting some diversity in there helps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just so overseeding those areas, and usually the month of April is a really good time to do that, and just make sure you get really good seed to soil contact. So whether you have to, you know, rake it, or if it's really thick, you might have to do there's a machine called a slit seeder. You can actually rent and actually put slits in the soil. And so doing that, and then just also watching, you know, obviously you must be doing something right if it's going well, but, you know, watching, make sure you don't over-fertilize, those kinds of things. Just looking at your maintenance techniques are important, too.
Well, thanks for your help. I think I'll try the seeding. That sounds like a thing I should be trying.
Right. And if you check with your local extension office, we have all kinds of fact sheets on, you know, proper maintenance as well as some of the really good turf grass varieties that are out there.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Sure.
All right. Thanks for the call. Is this something that happens just because you get to a point where it's where the temperatures go up? Is it about heat? Is it about dry, you know, being dry?
Yeah, well, it's one of those things where a lot of times the fungus is there sort of doing its thing, but then when the grass goes under stress, like hot, dry, that's when we see the grass actually dying off and doing the whole thing. So the infection occurs before that, but then it doesn't really show up till later on. And that's why it's really hard to use fungicides for those kinds of things, especially in a homeowner situation, because you usually have to use a preventative. You have to do it before infection, and that's hard on a homeowner basis to sort of know that timing and all that kind of stuff. So normally we recommend just overseeding, getting some different grass in there, get some varieties that are different than what you have right there, and then hopefully there will be ones that will be more resistant to it.
Okay. Well, let's talk with someone in Indiana, line number three. Hello.
Hello. I hope this isn't an urban legend. What I'm after, I've learned the hard way with inside plants that I'm great in the beginning of the race, but then near the end I don't do too well. So what I like to do is try to find some kind of thing that would flower, hopefully a wildflower, actually, that I can just sort of throw down on the ground around my place and not worry about it. And let the Mother Nature take over and do it that way. Is there anything like that that you could suggest?
So you have a certain patch in your yard or landscape that you're thinking about just having it more?
No, this is no need really get aesthetic about this at all. This is just sort of like I don't like the way the house is stuck on the earth, so I want to put things around where those two things meet.
Oh, it's like just around the foundation
yeah.
and stuff like that. And you prefer something like a wildflower as opposed to a shrub?
Yeah,
or something?
Definitely, yeah.
Okay. And this is full sun, I take it, or?
Okay. The house front faces basically west, the east orientation, so we get a lot of the sun on the south side, and then some of the front gets it, too, in the early spring.
Well, you know, there's no such thing as a no-maintenance plant, I will tell you that.
Okay.
I mean, even the plastic ones will get dust and stuff on them, and you have to wash them off once in a while. So there's no such thing. So I will tell you that. But there certainly are some that are lower maintenance. So, you know, I would think, you know, purple coneflower is a great one. You know, I love purple coneflower. It's a, you know, beautiful plant. Has a long bloom period. It tends to be pretty tough. It doesn't really need a whole lot. Now, you know, every year in the springtime, you have to cut down the old stalks and that kind of thing. But it pretty much kind of does its thing, and it's a nice size. So purple coneflower is good. Black-eyed Susans, there's a bunch of them out there that are, too, that are really good. There's a variety called Goldstern that's been around for a number of years. It's that really, again, long bloom period. It works out really well. You know, even things like daylilies, you know, are pretty tough plants. I mean, if you see them growing along the roadside, nobody's taking care of them. They're getting mowed all the time. They still manage to survive. So daylilies are pretty darn tough. So those sort of mixing those together, you can get some early season daylilies to sort of stretch out your season. And then certainly the black-eyed Susans and the purple coneflower are more of a summer blooming type of plants. And then asters for late season bloom.
Okay,
I mean, those are easy to find, inexpensive.
Now, purple cornflower, is that a true purple? I think I've seen them where they were very light.
It's coneflower. And, yeah, they are very light, even though they're called purple. They're kind of
a
lightish.
Okay, I like them, in fact.
Yeah,
okay,
those are really pretty. And they actually have different colors now. They have they have some yellows and oranges and white ones. And so there are some other colors out there in the coneflowers, too, that are particularly nice. But a nice, durable plant.
I'll give both of them a try and see what happens.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Good luck.
Thanks. Well, our guest here this morning is Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension, Champaign County. And once a month, it's on the second Tuesday of the month, she is here, and we talk about things that grow in the home landscape. If you need some advice on plant selection, or maybe you have a problem, or you just have some other issue you want to talk about, you can do that. Give us a call, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. And our next caller is in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
Do I recall that you have been asked about problems with tulip bulbs? I planted quite a few of lily tulips and daffodils when I moved into my house maybe 10, 12 years ago. My daffodils are magnificent. They spread, and it seems as though I'm missing some of my tulips. I know I got them in deep enough, and they've bloomed before, but they just... Nothing seems, they either are getting worse or they're not there. What is that about?
Yeah. Well, and you probably, this is pretty typical, actually. Daffodils do great, and they'll multiply and do great year after year. Tulips are one of those that tend to go, depending on what varieties, and tend to kind of go downhill over a few years. We really don't have an excellent environment for tulips. You know, it's a little too hot in the summer, and it's just the conditions aren't quite right for what they really like. And so usually you see a decline. Have you ever dug them up to see what's going on or in that area?
No, I have not.
You might dig them up, and sometimes just dividing them, because they do produce those little daughter bulbs, and sometimes they get really, really clumped in there, and the bulbs then stay so small that they never flower very well. So sometimes digging them up and sort of spreading them out and giving them a little bit more rejuvenation in that way sometimes helps, but usually with tulips over a number of years, you have to buy new ones, or you should buy new ones.
Okay, so do I dig the other ones out before I put them in? I kind of am running out of space. Do I mark where they were and then go in and get them later on and just dump them out if they don't look like...
Yeah, ideally what we do, and I always deal with ideally, but we don't always do what's ideal. Ideally, yes, just what you just said, you know, sort of mark where they are. And actually, golf tees work out really well. I've used those before. You can sort of stick them in the ground and kind of cover them up a little bit with mulch, and it works out really well to mark things like that. And then let the foliage die down natural, do its whole thing this spring. And then come in the fall, you know, September, October, then to go ahead and dig them up and replant and do all the stuff that we normally do with bulbs in the fall.
And if I found that there were several little bulbs, like little daughters, mm-hmm. and then I can take them apart and plant them, leave one in and plant the other ones at the same time around.
Yeah, you can, but again, with tulips, they're a little bit different. Now, with daffodils, that's really easy to do, just to sort of divide them up, and then those bulbs will get bigger and bigger every year. But with tulips, unfortunately, sometimes those daughter bulbs still never, you know, it takes them forever to finally get big enough so that they really flower very well. So I will tell you that you know, me either have to be real patient or decide that I'm just going to keep the big ones, replant those, and, you know, toss the other ones in the compost pile.
Okie-doke. Thanks very mm-hmm. much.
All right. Thanks for the call. Next is someone in Flossmoor. That's line number 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Well, we've had a problem with fungus on our geranium plants. Mm-hmm. And we had... are you still there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, so quiet.
we're listening.
Well, in 2004, you know, it was really wet.
Mm-hmm.
And so, all right, we thought that was it. But they ruin the plants. We keep them over the winter. We have a mm-hmm. south window in our garage. Mm-hmm. So we had to buy new plants. And now we, you know, dusted them and done all the things you're supposed to do. Last summer we got the fungus again. So I feel like maybe we put them in these plastic pots and in these square plastic planters. But I feel like somehow something's staying in there.
So when do you notice the fungus, the disease occurring?
Well,
is this a winter thing or is this a summer thing?
No, it was in probably August.
Okay, and then what does it look like when you say it has a fungus? What does it look like? Are the leaves dying?
Those little dots, and then the leaves die.
Little dots.
Well, they're little black dots, and then the whole thing sort of curls up and dies.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the reason they do get several different diseases. I was trying to figure out which one it is. If it's a fungus, then a lot of times we can. I don't know what you were dusting them with. Do you remember what product you were using? Or
let's see. What we got that book, you know, from the university about what you should use, and I can't remember
okay.
what it is.
Okay. Okay. Well, you know, there are a number of products. Actually, I've had pretty good luck with a product called Remedy, which is actually bicarbonate of soda. It's a special formulation of that to be used on plants, and it's really good for powdery mildew and some of those diseases that geraniums and a lot of other plants get. The other thing is geraniums do get a bacterial disease, and if it's bacterial, it actually can easily be transferred through cuttings, through plants, you know, just, and you can't get rid of it because it's not a fungus.
Yeah.
And so all those fungicides, you know, are just not going to get rid of a bacteria.
Well, it looks like, well, anyway... How do we need to sanitize our containers, our white pots and our square things? Do we need to do something to get any vestige of this off?
Well, I would do that, but I guess the other thing is that you may have to get brand new stock.
Oh, we did. We got new stock this year.
And you still get the...
Yeah, that's what bothered me. I feel
okay.
like there's... some way we need to clean.
Okay. We probably get a couple things. We probably need to get an accurate identification of really what the disease is, so we know whether it's a fungus or a bacterial.
Uh-huh.
And that's probably the big thing. So, you know, you can take it to your local extension office. There's the University of Illinois Plant Clinic. So there's lots of folks out there that can help you diagnose what the problem is. And then we'd know, you know, really what we need to do if you know, depending on what that comes out to be. But also, you always want to sterilize your tools. That would be the other thing. You can certainly transfer diseases on tools, even.
Yeah.
How
do we sterilize?
10% bleach solution is really good for.
Bleach, okay.
Right. And so in containers and those kind of things. So you may want to think about that. Good air circulation, trying to keep the leaves dry.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of things like that sometimes can help.
Is there some place I can send these to? because when I call over here, you know, the Cook County one, they just get me a master gardener. Mm-hmm. We're nice, but that doesn't.
Well, you can certainly either talk to them, and the University of Illinois Plant Clinic opens like the 1st of May, I think.
Okay.
And so they could certainly take care of that for you.
And how do I send something to them?
Well, do you have web access or?
Yeah.
Okay, you can just check for the University of Illinois Plant Clinic. Just
and then I'll find it.
And then you'll find it has all the information on how to send them samples and the cost and all those good things.
Okay.
So, okay.
Thank you.
Good luck.
All right, good luck.
Thank you very much.
All right. We'll keep on going here in Muncie next, but it's Muncie, Illinois, line number 2. Hello.
Hello. Yeah. I'm looking for a copy of the Midwest, I think it's Illinois Vegetable Gardening, and where on campus can I buy that or the extension, the stuff that the extension people have for sale?
Okay. Well, you can either go to your local extension office and see what they have. We all try to have at least some things there. You can also go online and go to publications, the University of Illinois, I think it's ACES Publications. I don't know the website. Maybe we can get that for you before we end today. But you can actually go online and you can order things online and they'll ship them right to you.
And there's no place on campus just to go buy them?
Well, there is. It's actually on South Wright Street.
Okay.
And it's out there actually just even south of the kind of south and east of the Assembly Hall. So
oh,
it's
that,
way
that,
out on
the
South Wright.
Or is it?
It's not too far from the plant clinic. It's kind of out where all the there's a lot of the farm agricultural
right.
things are out there.
I'm familiar with that.
Farm buildings, those kind of things. So South Wright.
And what's the name on the building?
I think it just says ACES Publications.
Oh, okay. Thank
uh-huh.
you.
Sure.
All right, thank you. And also, there is here a web page that I've got. What I did was type into my browser University of Illinois ACES Publications, and it comes up, and it's webstore.aces, A-C-E-S, dot UIUC dot EDU, /shopsite/, okay, that probably easier just to put in University yeah. of Illinois ACES Publications. But it does come up with a page here, and then you can go to Featured Selections, and it has a number of different things here, like Home Yard and Garden Pest Guide, and obviously stuff here for people who are growing corn and soybeans. Here we got Vegetable Gardening in the Midwest. Maybe yeah. that's the publication.
Right, right, which is an excellent book. If you're into vegetable gardening, it's an excellent book.
We have here also a lovely book titled Native Plants in the Home Landscape for the Upper Midwest.
Yeah, so and actually fairly that. New book, which is very nice for native plants.
And stuff to deal with pests and so forth. So there's a lot of good information there to help the home garden. Or if you got a backyard full of corn and beans, well,
there you go.
I'll fix you right up there. Okay. We have other callers here, and next is Champagne, and this is line 3. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
This is Maria Burke. Thanks for taking the call.
Mm-hmm.
My question is we have a plum tree. I'm not sure what variety of plum. They're small and reddish purple. And we have about maybe. It would be coming up on 3 years ago now. We had a really huge kind of harvest. And then the past 2 years, there really hasn't been much of anything. And it's also, it's an adult tree, and it's never been trained or pruned, really.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of all over the place. It's got a ton of, I don't know if they're called canes or just branches, new growth that just grows straight up,
mm-hmm, right.
And then there's quite a bit towards the top that we can't reach at all, and we were thinking maybe we should just trim a bunch of it down to where it's much more reachable,
mm-hmm.
And we've looked online at various websites about pruning trees, and we're not quite sure whether it's telling us we should cut off the new growth that's going straight up, and there was something that mentioned, you know, if you do this, then it's going to vegetate a lot, and that's not going to produce plums. And
mm-hmm.
It was a little bit confusing about how best to kind of shape the tree a little bit now that mm-hmm. it's an adult tree, but also how to encourage it to have better production.
Right, right. Well, it's definitely one of those things that it's a little different, obviously, than whether you're pruning shade trees. So mm-hmm. So make sure when you're looking at things on the web that you do find those fruit trees. Right now, that hopefully we'll have a new publication on tree fruits, but we really don't have one of those for the U of I. But there are certainly a number of states that do. I think Missouri has an excellent fact sheet on that. I think Iowa has one, mm-hmm. And it's you know, those things that go straight up generally are never a good idea because they usually call them water sprouts, but generally they generally never have flowers on them. They take up a lot of space. And so usually you're pretty safe of something, you know, to take those out. That's usually pretty standard with most things. And so I think probably you really need to get a good book or a good fact sheet or something that gives you a better idea on how you need, because you definitely need to think about doing some pruning.
Okay.
So, you know, I wish we had one here locally, but unfortunately
I know
we don't.
There was one.
Yeah, there was. Unfortunately, that one's out of print for the tree fruits. We do have one that actually that we've been. Now, where are you located? I'm sorry.
In Urbana.
Actually, if you come to our extension office, we're at 801 North Country Fair Drive. We do have a halfway decent one that's now out of print, but we've been printing it off. And it gives you some really pretty nice pictures and tells you all about pruning and how to prune them and open them up, because that's one of the big things is just trying to open them up so you get better air circulation and better sun penetration.
And so, does it really talk about adult trees? Because I know a lot of the websites we've gone to tell you how to deal with it when you're growing and trying to shake the tree initially. But since this one's already an adult, I don't know.
Yeah. Right. This one actually is pretty good because it talks about both. It talks about young stuff, and then it also talks about, you know, once they're older. And I think there even is ones, I think it's on apple trees, but it certainly talks more about, you know, pruning those older trees that maybe haven't been pruned for a number of years.
Okay,
so
great.
I think you'll like it. But we're 801 North Country Fair Drive there in Champaign, and we'll be glad to set you up for that.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Okay. Well, thank you. We just, I guess, just generally speaking, though, you pointed in a couple of the things that you want to think about when pruning fruit trees to try to have them not be real thick and clogged with foliage for a variety of reasons, both because of sun. You want to get better circulation. That helps you deal with the disease problems. And I suppose also if you're going to have fruit, and if it's a heavy fruit, you want the tree to be able to support the weight of the fruit.
Right.
So
right.
you want it to be really robust and have big, strong, heavy branches, too.
Right. And with some of them, they almost produce too much fruit.
Yeah.
So sometimes you actually have to go out and take some of the young stuff off in order to get any of any size. And I would say on, and I can't remember exactly on plums or not, but, you know, a lot of the fruit trees get into this biennial bearing where they'll really have heavy crops every other year. And if you don't prune, then generally that is actually made worse. I mean, it actually is more exaggerated, this biennial pruning. So sometimes just the fact of not pruning, you'll find that they'll produce a big crop every other year.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's keep on going here. We'll be past the midpoint, by the way. Sandy Mason is our guest. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month she's here. We talk about things that grow in the home landscape. So as I've said a couple of times here, if whatever's on your mind, maybe you're thinking about what you would like to plant this year. Maybe you have some problem. Something came up last year and you're just not really quite sure how to deal with it. But you want to try to make sure that the problem doesn't keep coming back, any and all of that. We can also talk about houseplants. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. The next caller should be in Mattoon, line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have a couple of questions regarding vegetables. About 3 weeks ago, I planted a half a row of spinach and lettuce,
mm-hmm.
and I plan to put it in another row in about 2 or 3 weeks, or a little longer. I had some fairly current seeds recently purchased for this first group, but I find that I have quite a few seeds left over from last fall
mm-hmm.
and last summer, and I just wondered, they weren't left out to freeze in a mm-hmm. shed or anything. They were mm-hmm. brought inside. You think they'd be all right?
Yeah, it's you're still probably going to see some reduced germination rate, but usually you can just overplant to take care of that, so you still have plenty of crops. But, you know, since you have a little bit of time here, you're not going to plant for another couple weeks or so, I would just take some of the seeds out of each one of those packets, and, you know, you can just roll up, you put them in a wet paper towel, put them in a plastic bag, and then just let it, put them in a warm spot for a couple of days, and then you'll see real quick whether they're going to germinate for you or not. And then that'll kind of give you an idea. If you get 2 out of 10 seeds, you know, to germinate, then you know, well, you know, the rate's not really good. I need to make sure I plant extra heavy, or maybe I just want to go ahead and buy new seed.
I see. Just put them in a wet towel.
Just a wet paper towel, put them in a plastic bag, and just put them in a warm spot just for a couple of days, and they'll go ahead and germinate for you. And then it just gives you a better idea of what's going on in the seed packet.
Last year, I planted a number of tomato plants, and some of them I had a problem with the blossom rot.
Mm-hmm.
And someone told me they needed some calcium or something. I did spray some and didn't have too much trouble after that.
Mm-hmm.
Someone said you could, when you plant them, you could add something to it that would stop this blossom rot.
Yeah. Well, blossom end rot, I mean, there's some truth to that. And certainly it is a calcium deficiency. The calcium isn't getting to the fruit, which is needs a lot of calcium, and that's a sink for calcium. At any rate, the problem really is what's going on weather-wise. And it's usually, we always get blossom end rot normally when we're getting a lot of humidity, when there's high humidity, high temperatures, those kinds of things is usually, and of course, that's when tomatoes are producing, of course. And that's usually when we see blossom end rot. So a lot of it has to do with weather.
And then
by the time the weather sort of, usually we just say, you know, you got to wait the weather out a little bit, and then it cools off a little bit, it gets less humid, and then they start producing better.
Would adding too much water, watering them too often, be a factor?
Well, probably, I guess a couple of things they found that makes blossom end rot worse, and or can certainly make it better, is if you're watering, if they're going from wet to dry, wet to dry, wet to dry, that tends to make blossom end rot worse. So they need a consistent moisture supply.
So about putting lime on the garden?
You really don't need lime. Lime isn't the issue unless you know you have too acidic soils. And actually, tomatoes kind of like it somewhat acidic anyway. So unless you've had a soil test that, you know, that says that you have a, you know, 3.5, I wouldn't worry about putting lime on it, because lime really isn't the issue. So
I got cages for my plants.
And that's good.
And I'm wondering, do I need to, they've been left out all winter. Do I need to disinfect them or do anything to them?
I wouldn't worry about, you know, unless you've had some, like, leaf disease problems. And it certainly, if you've had, and they certainly do get their leaf spot diseases, then you might want to use a bleach solution. That's probably always a good idea. But just cleaning up, getting rid of any old leaves that are around there is really good. Mulching is another thing that's really good. They've really found that to also improve not getting so much blossom end rot. So if you're mulching them, that helps too. But caging is good too, because it seems like ones that are pruned a lot also get a lot of blossom end rot. So it's really how the plant is taking up water is a problem with blossom end rot. It's not that there's no calcium there.
One other question regarding a plant. We have a cactus plant that mm-hmm. was given to us many years ago, and it was left out a little late.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether it's it got frosted, apparently.
Right.
Brought it inside, and one side of the plant is green,
mm-hmm.
and the other side is white, but mm-hmm. it hasn't seemed to deteriorate. It just seems to be that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that would be typical of something that got too cold like that. It causes that kind of almost a burning. And you'll find out really quick. Either that side will start to rot or something. It may have just gotten frosted enough, or it sort of killed some of those outside cells, and it'll still go on ahead and do its thing. It's probably never going to look, you know, like it looked before. You're probably always going to notice that there's something wrong with that one side. It will tell you that.
And one side is probably going to stay white then.
Yeah,
the other
right.
is green.
Yep. More than likely.
Okay. So, thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
All right. Thanks for the call. Just real quick to finish up with blossom end rot, because I know we've talked about this before.
Mm-hmm.
Just the good bottom line recommendation for people is that don't go out there and water real heavy the
yep.
plant and then just let it go for a week. You don't want, because that may be giving the plant the amount of water that it would need for the week, but you don't want to give it all in one big dose and then let it go dry.
Bone dry for weeks on end after that. So it's that consistent, and that's where mulch really helps out. If you can mulch, it keeps that consistent moisture there, and that makes a big difference. But a lot of it is weather that we have really, obviously, we have no control over, so we kind of have to wait it out.
All right. Next is Urbana, line number two. Hello.
Hi. I just wanted to suggest to people, actually I wanted to strongly recommend to people that we have all have a rule that we don't forward emails like the termite one or even things that we think we might agree with. I've had, in the past 2 months, I had one that was about Marines who weren't allowed to pray. It was bunk. Another one about the mystical significance of how you fold the American flag, and then the termite one. And each time I just went to, I went to Google and I typed in some of the keywords and typed in also urban legends. And there are a couple of websites that keep track of urban legends. And it doesn't make sense for us to, even if somebody likes what the message is proposing, they should check it because it doesn't make sense to pass along misinformation to people.
Good suggestion.
But the whole business of pests and are being protected by our cold weather from more warm weather pests. It seems to me that climate change is going to be removing some of that protection, and I'm just wondering what kinds of pests you have noticed are moving farther north. I've noticed, I've read about sea animals moving farther north, about climate change occurring, you know, on mountains and so forth. But how, in terms of the homeowner, have you noticed anything in particular that you can think of?
Personally, I don't know of any. You know, maybe if we talk to one of the state entomologists, they might have something that they're thinking of. I can certainly think of some plants. Kudzu for always comes to mind for me because, you know, for a long time it said kudzu was a southern species. We never see it north, and we have it in Illinois. So it's an exotic vine that's certainly adapted and now certainly does take our winters and with the winters that we've been having. But it doesn't, I guess the bottom line is on, it doesn't happen. It doesn't go from being, you know, southern species to a northern species just like overnight.
Right.
You know, there's an adaptation that's going on, and so it has to go through life cycles, and it has to go through years, and it has to. So I guess that was the point I was trying to make, that it happens over time. So it's not something that, you know, we're going to have Formosan termites overnight. Now, that's not to say that we wouldn't someday have them. Hopefully we don't, but, you know, it's certainly not going to happen overnight.
No, I was thinking in terms of many years, but maybe within our lifetime we might have other things that, and I would think that there might be two things going on. One would be adaptation, selecting for critters that can survive cooler and cooler winters. And insects reproduce many generations pretty fast.
Oh, sure.
Depending on the insect, so they can evolve a whole lot faster. But the other thing is that if the climate zones are moving northward because, in general, because of climate change. You also have the weather not being as severe all the time or as consistently in order to knock off some of the critters. So I think there are probably two things that are going on.
Sure.
We need to be worried about. Thanks a bunch.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Sure. They actually changed the hardiness zone map.
We have
a new map.
So we really...
Actually made certain zones warmer.
Huh. Has that affected us here particularly?
Yeah, actually, we're listed on the Arbor Day Foundation updated the map, and now we're listed as Zone 6. But it's going to take a while. You know, it always takes a while before things start to show up in catalogs and those kinds of things. But we will eventually. I think you'll see that kind of thing. But they you know, we're not considered as cold as we used to
be. So we used to be 5?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Well, that's interesting. Okay. So that could bring with it some problems. Also, on the other hand, it could mean some plants that you would have liked to have in the past where the advice was, well, maybe you couldn't, or we were just right on the line.
Right.
So that might make some difference in plants and like
that. Of course, with gardeners, we're always tempting those zones anyway. We're always going for the warmer zone ones, thinking that, oh, I can get this to live.
It'll be fine.
It'll be fine.
I'll just
so
tell
them
how much
tempting.
I love it, and it'll be fine.
Yeah, we're always trying to burst the bubble on that one.
Okay, well, let's go to Marymount, I think, line number three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm calling from Fairmount.
Oh, Fairmount. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Yes.
I was calling. My son I told him he could plant anything he wanted to plant this year, and he's decided he wants to plant blueberries.
Oh,
and
okay.
We've told him that he won't get a crop this year, that it'll have to wait a year, but we're trying to find a variety that would plant well here and also whether we should look at a bush type or a wild type.
Yeah, and you're in Fairmont, is that what you said? Probably, yeah. Probably some of the ones to think about, I guess probably the biggest thing, no matter what one you pick, is that you realize they need an acidic soil.
Yes.
So this is actually going to be a really good test for him. This will be a great test for him because now he's going to have to think about the future, think about soil preparation. So this will be good. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to look here real quick if I could come up with some blueberries for you. There's a few of them that are nice are Blue Crop, Blue Ray, Jersey, Berkeley, Late Blue, is another good one, Herbert. But there's a bunch of, we actually have the U of I Extension has a very nice small fruits book, and it's only $5. Very
okay.
Nice. And you can go online, as we were talking, you can go online and purchase that book, but it mentions all the varieties that are good for Illinois, and it does mention the whole thing about soil preparation, making sure that you do that well in advance. I'd be doing that now, you know, adding sulfur, you know, he could even do a soil test. That'd be great. So that's actually, even though that's maybe one of the more difficult crops, that'll be a really good lesson for him all the way around. He'll learn all kinds of things when it comes to growing blueberries.
Okay. So I can, and the Small Fruits book is one of the publications. That'll
right.
also have recommendations and also probably for strawberries and things like that.
Yep. Yep, it has strawberries, blackberries, raspberries. It's really a nice book, and for $5, it's really quite a deal. We sell a lot of that one.
Okay, well, wonderful. Thanks so much.
Sure.
Right, thanks for the question. Just real quick here, I want to get a question on behalf of my friend, Mr. Frayne, the guy who's on the other side of the glass. We had apparently had the discussion in the past where he had grown some tomatoes and then mm-hmm. the next year got volunteers springing mm-hmm. up from mm-hmm. the previous tomatoes. And he said something to me about that, you know, what did I think about that? And the only thing I recall having said to him was that the thing about some hybrids is that they will mm-hmm. not breed true from their seeds.
Right.
So I just think I said something about you might not get the same tomato from the seeds of that
right.
tomato.
Right.
And he says now he wants you to debunk me on the air here
there,
on my
is
own
there, Is there any money
show.
On this? Is there any money or a
no.
lunch or anything
no.
like that?
No,
or,
no. He
oh,
just,
man.
No, he just probably liked to tell me that I'm wrong.
Well, actually, it's the couple things. Depends on what variety you started out with. So you're absolutely right. If it's a hybrid, especially if it's an F1 hybrid, you're not going to get the same thing. We know that. It still may be a halfway decent tomato, but you're not going to get the same thing. It just doesn't work that way when we have hybrids. Now, if it was an heirloom variety, one that had been around for a number of years, the Gen X is actually pretty stable on those, you absolutely can use the seeds from those and pretty much get the same plant. I mean,
right.
because
okay.
the Gen X is fairly stable on those. So it depends on what he started out with.
Okay.
It's probably the big
so
thing.
It's not that necessarily that there would be anything wrong with the tomato that it would produce. It's just that it might not be the same tomato that
exactly.
it came from.
Exactly. And, you know, you may find that you like it even more. You know, you never know about those kinds of things. But it really depends on what you start out with. Hybrids, you know, who knows what you're going to get.
Yeah. Well, that's
the
that's
other
kind
ones.
Of fun, yeah.
Big difference.
All right, very good. Because there still are people who save seeds.
Sure.
And places where they do indeed try to conserve those kinds of heirloom varieties that get to the point where you can't find them anymore. They get very difficult. And some people do prize those because for a variety of reasons, because they're different, because they just like to plant different things.
Sure.
Also because of this concern that over time what we've done is that we've cut down on the number of varieties of plants, you know, we're and then if something comes along and a disease comes and could wipe
sure.
out a lot of stuff, and then we'd be, you know, then
yeah.
we would be
genetic diversity.
So I mean, saving seeds, genetic diversity, good thing.
Sure, sure. You bet. And there's a whole catalog, whole company that, you know, Seed Savers Exchange is one of
right.
them that just deals in that. You can find all kinds of things you never thought existed.
Yeah.
I don't know how many different hundreds of varieties of tomatoes they have in
wacky
there.
Tomatoes.
Wacky tomatoes.
Beans.
There's probably one
potatoes.
Called wacky tomatoes.
Could be. If not, we'll invent one. All right. Well, let's see if we get some more folks in here. Champagne next is line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Back to rose bushes.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that going into winter, you should not trim them back, but about now is a good time, and they should be trimmed down to knee length type of thing. And then I read that you should put like fingernail polish or fingernail polish remover on those cuts. And I didn't get which was which, but is that, you agree with that?
Well, a couple things on how, I mean, as far as the pruning, that's great. You know, how far down you prune depends on the variety. It sounds like you're probably talking about more like tea rose or something. We might do some heavy pruning, but with shrub roses and some of those, you may not cut them down that far. And probably what you're hearing is there is an insect called a cane borer, and it actually will lay its eggs on that very tip, that cut surface. They like that cut surface, and they'll lay an egg and then actually bores in. And so a lot of times people either will put on it's nail polish. You actually just trying to cover it. It's kind of a lacquer thing, obviously. You're just trying to cover it. Or sometimes people just use Elmer's glue or still wood carpenter's glue or something just to sort of seal the end. Now, I don't always do that, and I've never had problems with cane borer, but certainly if it's something that's been a problem for you in the past, that would be a good idea.
How about paint? Just plain paint?
With
a cotton swab or something like that.
You certainly could. I don't know how that's going to look. I mean, depending on what color.
Well, I've got black, so it would work within
the... Yeah, I suppose it's probably if it's a latex or something, I wouldn't use an oil paint by any means.
Do not use an oil paint.
I wouldn't.
Use it, but latex
plants and
would be
petroleum.
Okay.
Yeah, plants and petroleum usually doesn't work too well
right.
together. But and I think part of it is you're just trying to seal it for a while.
Yeah.
It's not like you're trying to seal it forever. It's just that brand new cut surface is what seems to attract them.
Yeah.
So so once the nail polish falls off or whatever, then it's fine. We don't worry about it. So that's why I think people mainly use just temporary things.
Right. Okay.
Sure.
Thank you.
All right,
thank you. And, of course, with the nail polish, then you could choose the shade that you really
like.
You
could. And actually do them in different colors.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. We've gone too far. We've gone too far.
Oh, no. No, I'm sure there's farther that we can go. We won't press it this morning, but on some future show. Champagne, another caller here. Champagne line two. Hello.
Yeah, I'm back to a basic cut type question. I just read your article about the termites. I know mm-hmm. you talked at the beginning of the hour, but I mm-hmm. wasn't able to call right then. But in that article, you said to leave a foot bare mm-hmm. around the house. How in this climate with the richest soil on earth do you get soil to be bare around the house?
Because of weeds?
Everything is covered in weeds and nothing else.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think the reason I mention that is just with the wood mulch itself is not piling it up right next to the foundation was what I was trying to get people to do.
Oh.
Fine. If you have a very thin layer next to the house, that's fine. It's just don't pile it up. And that's not just because of the concern over termites, but also you'll get things like earwigs and sow bugs and millipedes and all kinds of things that like that mulch, and then they make their way into your basement and into your house. So that's just trying to keep all those nuisant guys away.
Oh, I thought you meant no plants within a foot of your house.
No, I was really thinking, actually, I'm not sure you'd want to plant. Well, you certainly could have a plant. I really meant the mulch itself. I didn't state that very well in the article.
My finding is the plants go there. And then real quick,
right.
Service berries, how do they compare to blueberries in terms of, you know, they're earlier, but are they easier to grow and are... You know, as far as they're pretty similar tasting, I think.
Yeah, yeah, they're easier to grow. They're pretty similar tasting. Probably one of the big things, you know, I guess if you get the smaller one, you know, some of the service berries are trees, which makes it harder to pick them. So if you've got some of the more shrubby type service berries, they're certainly very easy to grow, native to this area. You know, that kind of thing. To me, they're a little, you know, I think they're a little drier berry. They don't have... To me, they don't have quite the taste, and they're not quite as big. But if you just want a berry, I think that's great.
Okay.
You know, if you want to go with those. It's hard to fight the bird. You know, you're going to have to cover them because the birds love them, too.
Oh.
So it'd be...
All right. Okay, thanks.
Sure.
All right, thank you. Mattoon, line number four. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I hope you haven't discussed ash trees. I wasn't able to listen to everything, but
nope.
I've got a green ash that's probably 12 or 13 years old, about 30 feet tall. And year before last, it showed misshapen leaves, you know, looked kind of odd.
Mm-hmm.
The leaves came out, but there was something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, maybe it will go away, but it didn't. And last year when it came out, it looked, they again looked kind of, you know, they're misshapen
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
a little thin, not as full as it should be.
Mm-hmm.
So I had the arborist treat it. And it was a matter of drilling holes and in it, and I don't know what he put in it, but he is reliable, I think, and he treated it. But how long do you give these trees? I mean, you know, I could cut it down and start over again.
Right.
And
right.
I didn't know whether anything, the borers, have they gotten here yet? The ash?
No, not yet. Not.
They have.
Yeah. Let's hope they stay north.
Don't.
Yeah.
What would you do? Would you wait and see what it looks like this year?
I would wait and see what it looks like. If you're seeing, because you could be seeing just a problem with what's called anthracnose, which is a leaf disease problem, and they get these kind of misshapen leaves, and it's not a big deal, and you know they.
It's just cosmetic.
Yeah. It's just cosmetic.
Yeah.
Now we are seeing some more serious diseases in ash, where you actually start to see dieback. And they sort of decline over a number of years, and actually sometimes fairly fast. And if that's the case, then I'd say the prognosis is not very good for it. If you're seeing a lot of dieback and that kind of thing, because
we might as well take it out.
Yeah. So you might wait and see what happens this spring. If you see a lot of dead branches, you may really want to think about evaluating and getting a new one.
And fall's a good time to plant anyway, isn't it?
Spring or fall.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Okay, well, thank you. Enjoy your program.
Okay, great.
Thanks for the call. Well, we're going to have to stop. I'm sorry, we have one more person we can't take, but I do want to mention that on Wednesday on the Afternoon Magazine in the 1 o'clock hour, there'll be another opportunity to ask questions about growing things in the home landscape. Particularly, I think what they want to focus on is trees on that show. The guest will be Mike Brunk. He is the arborist for the city of Urbana. And also Diane Noland will be on the show. She hosts WILO-TV's program Illinois Gardener, and she teaches in natural resources and environmental sciences at the U of I. Celeste Quinn, the host. So that's Wednesday, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And then Illinois Gardener, of course, is on every week, WILL-TV, Thursday nights at 7 o'clock. It's a live show. And there again is the chance to ask questions.